This is the second one with farting aliens.
But no space pigs.
And who needs them when you've got farting aliens?
And UNIT.
You seem oddly disorganized.
And an intrepid MP from Flydell North.
It's called World War III.
Here we...
farting aliens.
Go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow!
Tennant, Smith, and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, and welcome to N005 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am. And you are JD.
Yes, I am.
Goddamn right you are. And today we are reviewing World War III, the second installment of the two-parter that brought us farting aliens. If you haven't listened to our review, our episode N004, which was our review of Aliens of London, what are you waiting for? Go forth and do so post-haste, and then listen to this episode, because it may not make much sense to you if you haven't listened to it. That being said, here we are.
Yes, and, you know, it's a couple of firsts here. That there is a first time we've had a two-parter in New Who.
Bingo.
It is the first time that we've had a two-parter, I think, in quite a long time, where the second part is not titled the same as the first part.
I reacted to that as well.
Originally, Russell T. Davis, when he wrote them, had Aliens of London Part 2
okay.
as the name of this episode, but he decided to basically call it World War 3 fairly late on in the development stage. It was literally minutes before it was, you know, got ready for production.
So. Oh, really? I think it's a bad idea, by the way. Sorry, not that you have two different names for the two episodes. I'm happy with that. That's fine, because the whole thing is more or less a continuation anyway. So many episodes start where the last one ended, so I'm happy with that. But I think World War III is a terrible name for this episode. World War III should be the name of a Doctor Who story, but it should be like a massive freaking World War III.
I'm in two minds about
okay.
this.
Well, I think so, largely because there's no real war here. There is maybe the illusion of an impending war, but it never manifests, spoiler alert. And even if it did, it wouldn't be a war. Okay, I mean, there's nothing. The closest we get to World War III is almost shooting some missiles onto a non-existent mothership. Spoiler alert. I want to see a World War III episode, but I want to see, like, soldiers. I want to see grunts on the ground fighting, and maybe one side having Cybermen, the other side having Daleks, whatever. Like, that could be a massively awesome story. And that's what you think you're going to get when you see this episode name.
I think that when you take a look at some of the other two-parters that have occurred in Who.
Yeah.
In New Who, that you have some really bad episode titles for the second half of them.
Huh.
You have The Empty Child, which is the first part of a two-parter,
yeah.
which is an incredibly evocative title.
Most definitely.
And it is, you know, pretty much what the episode is about.
Followed by The Doctor Dances.
Which is only tangentially relevant to what is going on.
Yeah.
Then, at the end of this season, you actually do get one which is very relevant, which is Bad Wolf and The Parting of the Ways. They are two very different stories, which are then linked.
Linked together, yeah.
Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel. Yeah, I can understand that one.
Fair enough. You need to ham-fist a Steel reference in there somewhere.
So then they start getting, you know, a bit better. And then it takes until the last ever David Tennant one for us to get a part one.
Part two, yeah.
And it is still the only part one and part two in New Who, which is The End of Time.
Oh, really?
But it was not originally called Part 1 and Part 2.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Spoiler alert trivia.
Yes, it was originally... The first part was originally called The End of Time.
Okay.
And the second part was originally called The Last Days of Planet Earth.
Huh.
And it was renamed to The End of Time Part 2.
I quite like the original title.
So do I.
Huh. Well, I look forward to having that conversation with you again in about a year's time or whatever.
About a year's time.
Yeah.
This episode, as we said, could have been seriously improved by it not being being called World War III.
And also and not featuring farting freaking aliens.
If you haven't listened to our last episode, you will know the rant, which will continue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It will.
Let us jump in to our bite-sized chunk of poo.
It's B-Scout time. Bite-sized chunk of poo. The Doctor escapes the cliffhanger from the previous episode, and in a blaze of glory, Mickey, aka Ricky, rescues Jackie, which will become a regular trope during this episode.
Downing Street is under attack, and Mickey Smith has access to nuclear missiles, which goes oddly better than expected, considering he doesn't blow up Surrey by mistake.
The alien's plan is revealed, and it's ultimately a totally ridiculous plan, which a Bond villain would be quite proud of, I think, and it very nearly succeeds, too. But thankfully, our heroes are here to save the day.
The Doctor, Rose, Mickey, Jackie, and Harry Jones, the MP for Flydale North, have a unique solution to the problem. Hannibal.
Awesome. B-Scout over.
And you are welcome.
Oh, you most certainly are.
So, we have a Flash Gordon 1960s black and white serial moment of a recap from the end of the last episode.
Yes, we do. People are being electrocuted left, right, and centre.
Except it goes on for slightly less time than at the end of the last episode, which made it look a lot more threatening, and the Doctor rips off his ID card.
Yep,
and basically sticks it on the Slovene.
Yeah, exactly. Fake Asquith. And for some reason, electrocuting Asquith also simultaneously shocks fake acting Prime Minister, and also fake policeman who's about to murder, death, kill Jackie.
And then Mickey Smith.
Oh, and poor man's M.
Yes, but Mickey Smith arrives, rescues Jackie in a moment of utter heroism.
Even though technically he didn't need to. I mean, at this point, she could literally just walk out of her kitchen.
She's screaming, gibbering wreck.
Yeah, but she could still do it. I mean, technically, there's nothing stopping her. Fake policeman is being electrocuted. She could just walk up, or like get up, make herself a nice toast with cheddar and Marmite, and then walk out, and that would be it. She would survive. Mickey is a hero of circumstance.
Mickey is a hero. Get over it.
Okay, fine.
I've got Noel Clark on the phone here, right? What Noel has just texted me is, Mickey was a hero in this scene. Ponkin, get over it.
Just so that we don't get sued, Noel Clark was not actually on the phone there. All right, so...
No, he was texting. So, also, Harry Jones, the MP for Flydale North, and Rose also run out, which they should have done at the end of the last episode when she was de-suiting.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Now they seem to have realised that they're in danger, so now run.
Yep.
So the Doctor basically...
he pops his head out.
Soldiers.
Yeah, exactly.
But sadly, by the time the soldiers and the Doctor arrive, he has resuited himself as General Asquith.
Yeah, and they've also stopped the whole electrocution thingamajiggy. And then basically just go, they fake acting Prime Minister points at the Doctor and goes, yeah, he did it. There was some flashy lights and wibbly wobbly stuff, and then he killed everyone. Why no one doubts this is beyond me. I mean, the Doctor went and got the soldiers.
Yes, and then the soldiers do something even more ridiculous, which basically General Asquith and the Prime Minister say, arrest him and, kill him.
Yeah.
But they back him up against a lift.
Yeah.
And he manages to get in the lift, sonic the door, close the door before they can shoot. These soldiers are literally the worst reaction time in living memory.
Yeah, and it was the exact same in episode one of this double feature. The shittest soldiers, the slowest unit dudes, these are actually unit dudes, aren't they? The slowest policemen, the most non-existent security force of number 10 Downing Street. Everyone who is in any way associated with security in this universe should be fired, like just right on the spot, and remove their pensions as well. These people have not done anything to deserve their rank.
So the Doctor escapes and they seal off 10 Downing Street.
Yep.
And the General Asquith and Acting Prime Minister go to the top floor of 10 Downing Street. But for some reason on the way, they decide to de-suit themselves so they can be naked, to quote what they say.
Yeah.
Which is the most illogical thing you can imagine them doing when they need to order a load of soldiers around.
Yeah, exactly. It makes no sense whatsoever. But what we are told a little bit later on is that culturally, whatever race these Slovene belong to, and we will explain that when we get to it, but their race, culturally, they are not obsessed, but they do value the hunt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So very possibly the reason they disrobe, even though it goes against logic and reason completely. Very possibly the reason they do it is because they just can't resist the temptation to go on the hunt.
Yeah, I still think, you know, considering the rest of their plan, this was stupid.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a question for you. So they have these massive claws, right? When they walk around naked, they have these massive claws, like freaking Wolverine style.
I can tell where the question is going.
Okay. Obviously. Could they not use their claws whilst dressed as humans, a la Wolverine?
I have two possible solutions to this.
Because that would be awesome.
Neither of them are very good.
Okay.
The first one is by breaking the line of the suit, it would stops the compression field from working properly.
Okay.
That's tenuous answer number one.
Okay.
Or tenuous answer number two is that, like most of the rest of this episode, no one had thought about it logically.
Okay, also possible.
Moving over, Harry Jones and MP Flydell North and Rose head back to the cabin's office to pick up these magic papers of emergency protocols.
Which they don't need, as far as I can tell.
That really don't come into play.
Yeah, exactly.
And the doctor's lift stops, the Sylvina distracted, they hide.
In some other room, like a function room.
Basically, we get, this is a chase sequence. I'll cut this short.
Okay.
We have a chase sequence, and we actually get a good moment with Penelope Wilton here, where Margaret, the poor man's M, whose name has been revealed to not be Margaret, to say the least, who is blonde Felfoch Pasmina Day Slovene instead.
Beautiful.
Basically smells out Rose, probably because she's wearing a lot of perfume. And Harriet then comes out from where she's hiding and offers herself in Rose's place.
Yeah, very heroically.
Absolutely. The doctor comes in and saves both Harriet and Rose.
Yeah, but they don't know that that's going to happen.
No. This is Harriet being a hero.
Yeah.
In a way that you are absolutely right, that Mickey wasn't earlier, that this is Harriet doing this on her own back.
Yeah.
So Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale North, goes back to try and get these bloody emergency protocols. And they're being chased by the Slovene.
Yeah. So, right, blah, blah, blah. They go and hide in a room. She turns up. She starts sniffing them a little bit here and there. Like, oh my God, I can smell an old lady. And then I can smell some really hot bird. And then the other Slovene turn up as well. Fake Prime Minister and fake Asquith turn up. They're all naked now.
But the Doctor holds them off.
Yes.
By an amazing bluff. By holding a decanter of port and his sonic.
Does he do that first? First, he blasts them in the face with a fire extinguisher.
He does that to Margaret.
Oh, sorry. Definitely. Okay.
And then they go back to the cabinet office, they pick up the papers, and then he bluffs them.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry.
Because he threatens to increase the flammability of the port with the sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
Which we find out is actually a bluff.
Yeah. And also, is that so bad? I mean, I will make this bottle of port more flammable. That's it. That's the big threat.
Yes, but...
Yeah, okay, fair enough. No, I mean, and it works.
And we find out who these people are.
Yeah.
And we find out that they're called the Slovene.
Yeah.
Which aren't a race, it's actually a family.
Yeah, exactly.
Margaret is Blonde Felfoch Pasmina Day Slovene. The fake Prime Minister is Jocasta Felfoch Pasmina Day Slovene.
Beautiful.
And then basically General Asquith turns around and goes, hold on, did you say increase the flammability of that port?
Yeah.
And then the Doctor slams down the massive security bulkheads, sealing the Slovene out of the room.
Well, rather, sealing themselves in.
And as they mention it, also sealing themselves in.
Yeah.
So we now cut to the Slovene. Now that the Doc is out of the way, they can carry on with their master plan.
Yeah. So they're going to get the rest of the family in. This is a family business, they've said. This is the Slovene family business. So now they're going to get the rest of the fam to number 10 Downing Street. And we get a little bit of a cutscene of, what's his face? The TV reporter?
Andrew Marr,
bingo bongo, outside number 10 going, well, it's really strange, the weird people who are turning up here at number 10. We have, like, a group captain of the RAF. Which is unheard of. Like, why is the RAF here? We have the deputy secretary for the Scottish Parliament. And, weirdly, we have the chairman of the North Sea Boating Club.
All of them are large people.
Yes, they are all corpulent. I love that word.
And we find out that these are the family Slovene.
Yeah, and they basically, like, they all come in, the soldiers, they stay out of their way, because fake Prime Minister, who's now back in his fake Prime Minister gear, it seems very easy for them to get into this clothing, by the way. Like, clothing, I mean hollowed out humans. And no one seems to notice that they have zips on their foreheads. But so the soldiers are staying out of their way. And meanwhile, poor man's M is going, why don't you just go in here and disrobe? And meanwhile, she's like in the wardrobe, hanging hollowed out human beings on coat hangers.
Which in another episode could have been quite scary and creepy.
Yeah.
But not this episode.
It's silly.
The only member of the Slovene family who isn't here is Sip.
Yeah, who is fake
and
policeman.
Sip is fake policeman, yeah. Who hasn't yet killed anyone.
Exactly. However, so, we're going to meet him very soon. Sorry, I cut you off there. Do you want to go on?
No. You're going to say exactly what I'm saying. So he's chasing Mickey and Jackie.
Yeah.
Who have now gone back to Mickey's bachelor pad of doom.
Oh, God. This place
is awful.
Yeah, we are now in probably one of the most depressing kitchens in fake London. This place looks... There is a deplorably low level of hygiene in this kitchen.
and a deplorably low level of food in this kitchen as well.
Yeah, also very true. I guess he hasn't been to Iceland in a while. But yeah, so anyway.
Jackie has a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And then she starts apologising to Mickey because she's been accusing Mickey for the past year of murdering Rose, and now Mickey has saved her life. It's all the doctor's fault. The policemen are trying to kill her, and the policeman starts off after Jackie and Mickey.
Yeah. Do you reckon Mickey Ricky thinks that the doc is banging Rose?
Yeah, Mickey definitely thinks that.
Oh, okay. There's a serious amount of phallic envy going on here, because I'm assuming... Okay, no, let's not even get into that. We get a cutscene of fake policeman outside telling his colleagues, like the... Yeah, there are tons of policemen there. He tells his colleagues, who are actual humans, head back to the station or to wherever. I'm not finished with Jackie Tyler just yet. And then he sniffs the air a little bit.
Oh, yeah, to be honest, out of all of the Slovene, he's the least irritating one so far.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And he's also seemingly the most deadly.
He does seem so. Yeah, he's got that sort of psycho vein to him.
Which none of the rest of them have.
Yeah, the other ones are too slapsticky. They just fart and giggle, whereas he like goes, everyone associated with the Doctor is trouble, and we have to deal with trouble. He is a legitimate badass.
We now cut back to
number 10.
The cabinet closet.
Yes.
Harriet is showing quite compassion that she didn't actually know Ganesh's name.
Yeah.
Didn't know his name. And she's actually quite miserable over that.
Yeah, she is.
He was nice.
Yeah, she would make a good PM.
Yes, we'll get to that. So basically we get an explanation of the farting, which is there's a compression field, but gas is a side effect.
Yeah.
We also find out that they couldn't use the Prime Minister because the Prime Minister is svelte and slim.
Yes.
Which I think Tony Blair is going, yes, they thought I was slim.
Yeah, but they also killed my lookalike and stuffed him in a cupboard.
So, but we have a point about the Doctor, and we know the Doctor is pretty much all knowledgeable. And he goes, Harriet Jones, where have I heard that name before? And which is foreshadowing things to come.
Hang on, I'm going to stop you right there because, oh my God, this pisses me off. All right, so the Doctor, he remembers Harriet. As in, he remembers her name, and spoiler alert, because of her political career to come.
Correct.
But in episode one of this double feature, when the spaceship crashed, he went, oh my God, what if this is it? What if this is first contact? This is so exciting. I'm here and seeing history in the making. So wait, he remembers the name of some politician in the history of mankind. He remembers the name of one politician, but he doesn't remember or is even remotely aware of how first contact occurred. Shouldn't he have gone, oh shit, we've arrived just as the freaking Slovene family is arriving?
No.
Oh, okay.
And it is understandable in the context of Doctor Who why. It's because time has been rewritten and changed so many times that, to be honest, how many first contacts do we need? Because we think of this. We think of the army of ghosts and Doomsday, the Cybermen and the Daleks arriving on Earth.
Mm.
We see Journey's End, where the Earth is moved across space and time to another part of the galaxy, into the Medusa Cascade.
Awesome.
People forget. People don't remember. Donna Noble couldn't even remember that. People forget. Time is rewritten. Time is changed. And time is mutable. So is this a time time when it was first contact, or, as we find out at the end, it wasn't. But Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale North, is also another change premise, because he says later, Harriet Jones, I remember because of this.
No,
then that never comes to pass.
Yeah, you know what? No, sorry, I take it back. You've convinced me. Because of the whole, the propaganda that follows, spoiler alert, the happy end of this episode, in that everyone denies it ever happening. Because of that, I believe you.
So, we are still in the cabinet bunker.
Yeah, sorry, tangent over.
And Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale North, finally gets her hands on the emergency protocol booklet,
yep,
reads through it, and goes, well, this is a pile of shit. Okay, we've now wasted half an episode getting to a booklet, which is then completely non-Chekhov gunned.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's not used. And Rose makes a sensible suggestion of, why don't we just bomb the Slovene? And then we find out that due to basically...
But maybe that's the Chekhov's gun. Because she mentions bombs, we then need to feature bombs in this episode.
That bit, is definitely a Chekhov's gun. We find out that due to an issue in the UK's past, the UN... actually has the codes for all the nuclear bombs.
Right.
So Britain can't launch it without UN approval. Now,
Big Brother.
Fun Doctor Who fact here.
Ooh.
In the first Tom Baker episode, Robot.
Oh, wait, hang on. Just give me a second while I lube up. All right, hit me.
In the episode Robot, it was actually the United Kingdom that was the guardian of what was called back then the destructor codes, the nuclear codes to fire the weapons.
Okay.
And the UK had access and control to every country's nuclear missiles.
Wow.
In Robot.
Well, that seems slightly unreasonable.
That's one way to describe it. Yeah. And basically these destructor codes were the reason for the Robot episode.
Yeah. Well, okay, anyway, this conversation is slightly cut short by the fact that Mickey Ricky is Instagramming Rose. He took a picture of the Slovene in Jackie's flat as it was being electrocuted, as it was being shocked. And this apparently to Rose is evidence of Mickey Ricky not being useless.
Yes, and we also, obviously, the reason why he can do this is Rose's phone is a superphone.
Yeah, exactly. From End of the World. Yeah.
The Doctor says, right, Mickey the idiot, I'm going to need your help. Mickey starts doing a happy dance.
Yeah.
Because he's become useful. And here we get something which makes me want to slap people, hurt people, and injure Russell T. Davis.
Oh no, is it the password?
The Doctor gets Mickey the Idiot to go onto the internet,
yep,
go to www.unit.com or something equally stupid. And gives him the secret password that not only lets him onto the UNIT website,
but also
every single password challenge on this website is the same password.
Okay.
The password is 7 characters long, doesn't contain any numeric or non-alphanumeric characters. It is not even secure enough to be a Facebook password.
Nope. Because there are no freaking uppercase letters.
There's nothing.
It's Buffalo. A freaking word.
Buffalo.
I was going to ask you about that. Is there some sort of trivia behind that word?
Not as far as I know.
Buffalo. Ugh. Maybe Russell T. Davis was chomping down on a piece of mozzarella at the time and just went, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's just pop that in.
I don't know of any sort of rationale in Doctor Who for it to be Buffalo.
Okay.
Certainly, as far as I can remember through any sort of, you know, appearance of units, there's never been a magic Buffalo or something. So.
Okay.
But basically, now we get Mickey is on the computer with the world's most stupid secure password, and Jackie basically says to the Doctor, will Rose be safe with you?
And the Doctor just can't answer. He has no answer to her question. Unfortunately, he is, like, saved by the bell, basically, because Mickey Ricky goes, I'm in. As though he has hacked the system. He has not. He's just input a password. And he does, however, tell Jackie, when she goes, like, what are you doing? He goes, like, oh, I'm hacking into, what was it? I'm hacking into the UNIT website. No, you're not.
You're
logging on. You're not hacking.
I'm logged in with the Doctor's password.
This is my point. This is my freaking point about stupid goddamn Mickey Ricky in this episode. He is not a hero. He doesn't save Jackie in her kitchen. He doesn't hack into a website, but he's given credit for both of these things, even though the solution was just handed to him on a silver platter in both scenarios by the Doctor.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Okay.
We find out that the least secure website in the universe is actually monitoring a signal from outer space.
Not just that.
Or being transmitted to outer space.
Yeah, no, it's a great sort of aggregator site. It aggregates satellite transmissions going from the Earth into outer space and presents them on a very neat sort of sine curve. It also controls all of the missiles anywhere.
It is a portal. You know, in our audiobook reviews, we've had our portal to oblivion and our portal of perving. This is the human equivalent.
Yeah, this is basically
the portal of everything.
Yeah, this is the tweet deck of mass destruction.
Yes. So at this point, so the Doctor starts listening to this space signal, and the actual decent thing turns up to try and kill them. Mickey tries to hold off them with a bat, but he doesn't have a back door, so Jackie can't actually go anywhere.
Yeah, but this is actually a really nice scene. The bit in the cabinet office is really, really cool, where the Doctor is trying to pinpoint what kind of alien race the Slitheen are.
In order to try and find a weakness to be able to kill them.
Exactly. That's an awesome scene.
Yes, and I think we should soundbite the end of it, where he's just coming to his conclusions.
Let's do that. We haven't had a soundbite yet.
Yeah. Soundbite?
Soundbite!
Calcium phosphate, organic calcium, living calcium, creatures made out of living calcium. What else? Hyphenated surname. Yes! That narrows it down to one planet. Raxicoricofallopatorius!
So, let me just double check something here.
Okie dokie.
What's the name of the planet?
Oh, shit. Okay, well, I actually have it in my notes in front of me. I know it starts with... I'm covering the thing, by the way. I know it starts with Roxy or Roxa, and it ends in Fallopatorius or something Aureus. Oh, shit, I can't say it. I'm going to look at it.
Raxicoricofallopatorius.
Raxicoricofallopatorius. Nice.
Which is actually, I think, one of the longest planet names until we get to the long game later in the season, when I will check your pronunciation again.
I apologize if I just completely messed that up, which I did. I apologize.
The aliens are from Raxicolico, phallic object. basically, he figures out, therefore, that their bodies are made of calcium.
Yeah.
Which means that they are vulnerable to acetic acid.
Yes.
So
he goes, just find anything in that kitchen of yours, which, handily, you are currently located in. Anything that contains vinegar, and basically just chuck it on this alien. Now, it turns out everything in this freaking disgusting hole of a kitchen is pickled. Everything is pickled.
He has. Pickled onions. Pickled eggs. Pickled gherkins. Pickled whatever. Evers.
Onions.
And we actually do get the Doctor going, and you kiss this person to Rose.
I know, it's really
nice.
Which
is actually also quite a nice bit.
It is.
So Jackie pours them all into basically a big jug and throws it at them.
Yeah.
And Mickey and Jackie are covered in Slitheen gunk.
Yeah. The Slitheen just freaking massively explodes. I'm trying to think of an appropriate film to reference here. The only thing that springs to mind is Big Trouble in Little China. This monster just freaking explodes. Explodes. Stuff all over the place. Very
and
sexy.
We then get Harriet Jones in the cabinet cupboard basically saying, Hannibal used vinegar to dissolve boulders going through the Alps.
Hmm.
And, you know, the Doc, Rose and Harriet think, we've won a small victory here. Let's take what we get because we're still in the closet.
Yeah.
So we can't get out of this cabinet.
I was quite surprised. Spoiler alert. The whole acid thing, the vinegar thing, it does not reappear. I was quite surprised by that.
It is a little bit surprising.
Yeah, because now we've found this massively awesome weapon. We've used it in an amateurish way, as in, let's just pour vinegar into a jug and chuck it on them manually. The next sort of standard step in, I guess, most adventure series would be, okay, so now we know the weakness, let's find a cleverer way of implementing it. As in, like, let's fill the sprinkler system with vinegar, something to that effect.
Well, it's back to Chekhov's gun again, in that if you put something into an episode in scene one or scene two, you're meant to use it at some point later on.
Yeah.
And this is the second of our Chekhov's guns, which hasn't happened. Well, the first one was the bloody pamphlet of emergency procedures, which is, you know, not used. We've got the vinegar of death, which is not used. The only one which is used is Rose's comment about basically nuking them.
True.
Which we'll come to in a minute.
Very true.
So we find out that the Slitheen can feel when each other dies.
Yep.
And
because they've lost a family member now.
Yeah, so fake Prime Minister goes outside and tells Andrew Marr and the waiting press that the Earth is under attack and they are capable of unleashing massive weapons of destruction within 45 seconds.
How do they know that?
Well, there's two things here. A, that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is a parody of Tony Blair and the Iraq items, where rather than unleashing massive weapons of destruction, they could unleash weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, mass destruction.
And it wasn't 45 seconds. Tony Blair's comment was 45 minutes.
Oh my God.
This is actually the entire Iraq thing with Tony Blair.
That's fantastic. Okay. So we have a dead Tony Blair in the closet and we have
a parody of him outside.
Yeah.
So Britain is meant to be basically directly underneath this mothership.
Yep.
And the only way we're going to survive is to Independence Day them and blow them up with a nuke.
Yeah. So now on TV, he implores the UN to grant them access to the launch codes. Is this really the proper procedure? Would you publicly announce to the world? It's like putting the UN on speakerphone, but instead of calling them, it's like, we're just going to assume that you're watching the BBC and we're going to have this conversation with the people instead. It is ridiculous.
Yes. But the most ridiculous bit of this episode is yet to come. So now the Doctor has heard this, they start putting together what this entire plan is and talk to this thing. And basically the plan, here we go.
Yep.
Once the Sylvain has the nuclear weapons codes, they will fire the entire set of Britain's nuclear weapons at every country on the planet, who will then fire their weapons at every other country on the planet, basically triggering the titular World War III, which, spoilers, doesn't happen.
Yeah, and also, that wouldn't be World War III.
And no, it wouldn't be World War III. So they have a Sylvain ship, and they are going to sit and wait out this nuclear war that goes on. And when all the nukes have gone out, basically the planet will be a radioactive planet, which then the Sylvain will sell off tiny, tiny little bits of as fuel.
Yeah, for other alien rocket ships.
For other aliens. And basically, the signal that they're sending out is an advert saying, come for our fuel.
Yeah.
The Doctor pissed.
Yeah, which the Doctor has somehow, he's deduced this somehow. I mean, he goes, that's what your signal is. It is an advert. Wait, why does it have to be that? It doesn't have to be that at all. It could be anything. It could literally be anything, including another distraction. Anyway, yeah, sorry. I keep cutting you off. Go for it.
Now I get to my slight issue.
Okay.
Up to this point, and we'll it's just a little an aside from everything that's going on the episode. We now know what the plan is.
Yeah.
And it makes pretty much very little sense. Until you take a little time back and let's travel back in time to the 10th of August, 1968.
Ooh.
When we realise that Russell T. Davis has actually just nicked an already existing episode and basically rewrote it.
Are you serious?
The episode was called The Dominators, and it is a Troughton episode, in that the titular Dominators land on the planet Dulkis.
These are those super blocky robot alien dudes, right?
Correct, the Quarks. In order to refuel the ship, what they're going to do is basically nuke the planet and then use it for fuel.
Well, well done, Russ. I guess you could argue that this is an homage. Maybe you could say that.
You could do.
I mean, that is a very nice euphemistic way of, paraphrasing plagiarism.
Yeah, and also, it's not a particularly brilliant episode, but it was awful. In fact, I was being nice. It was awful.
Okay.
So now,
We get the badass moment from the Doctor, dude, where the Doctor, because the way that we find out about this is he opens one of the metal door thingies that's sealing them in the room. They have the conversation with the Sylvain, which kind of makes no sense because at this point the Sylvain could just jump him, but they don't. And then he very slowly says, well, I'm going to stop you. You go, well, just you, locked in your little box. And he goes, yes, me. And very slowly closes the hatch again. It's pretty badass. I mean, it is dumb as hell, but it is pretty, pretty Steven Seagal.
Yeah, very, very much so. And we now get the UN Security Council have voted to say that they've convened. They're now voting.
Yeah, thank you very much, sleepiest US reporter ever, for telling us.
Yeah, and ultimately we get to the point where the UN Security Council wouldn't make this decision in 6 hours. They can't. It would be physically impossible for them to actually make a decision in that time. But this is a TV show, so, you know, we will live with this.
That's why she's sleepy. The time difference, dude. That's why she's sleepy.
Oh, time differences.
Oh, man.
There is
my mind was just blown. I just blew my own mind. Okay.
Yeah, it's midnight over there. So, but bear in mind that Doctor Who is not very good at this, and it started in the TV movie.
Okay.
Whenever it is midnight at one point on the planet, it's also midnight everywhere else on the planet, as we found out in the TV movie, and we will also find out later on in a few episodes of New Who. Anyway, the Doctor is inside the cabinet closet.
And he's chit-chatting with Jackie and Mickey Ricky.
The Doctor says, well, I can stop the Savine, but Rose is probably going to die. And Jackie forbids him to do it.
Yeah.
And then we get
Harriet stepping up. Yeah.
And we get Harriet, MP for Flydale North, who points out that she is the only one here that's actually elected.
Yeah.
And the only one, therefore, that has the right to make any decision about this entire thing.
Yeah. And so, she orders the Doctor to do whatever it is that he has planned. And as soon as she does that, he grins in a way that completely negates any, like, fragment of concern that he showed for Rose previously, in my humble opinion.
Absolutely. But he then does something even more stupid.
Yeah.
He then gives Mickey the control codes to the nuclear arsenal and the non-nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, what is the control code for this separate system?
It's a 417-digit password of alphanumeric character. No, it's Buffalo!
Same passwords. Like a subsection of the same website, basically, right?
So, basically, he launches a conventional non-nuke missile, thank God, at 10 Downing Street.
Yeah, from some submarine somewhere.
Jackie wants to stop Mickey, but she doesn't, because she knows deep down that this is the right thing to
do. Exactly. The future of mankind is at stake here.
And the three of them say, well, these metal walls probably won't protect us from a direct missile strike.
At which point Rose goes, it's totally fine, because you know when there's an earthquake, you just stand underneath a... what's it called? A load-bearing wall or whatever? Or you crouch under a table and you're going to survive. We're going to be hit by a missile that's been launched from a submarine. A freaking crazy, hardcore, Chuck Norris-style, massive missile. Let's hide under a table, which they do. And then we get a very nice little scene of Mickey, Ricky, and Jackie out on, like, the balcony, or possibly the same cement rooftop as in episode one, and they see the missile whizzing past. Very cool.
Yeah, you know, they're inside literally the cupboard inside the cupboard at this point.
It's very meta.
It is. And, you know, they're all holding hands and Harriet shouts out Hannibal as the missile hits.
Yeah.
So, Kablamatron. The Slovene are literally waiting for the call. They start fighting over which suit to wear when they realize they're about to be blown up. And then Indiana Jones, three people in a fridge.
Exactly.
They get out, safe, well, not even bruised, from the cabinet cupboard, and
number 10 Downing Street has been demolished.
Yeah, they are the only survivors from 10 Downing Street.
That's some cupboard they've got there.
We get a brilliant point, actually.
What's that?
Harriet, she does take complete charge here.
Oh, okay, yes, that is true.
She literally goes up, she says, right, the crisis is over. The human race are unbowed, undefeated. She is, literally, at this point, the best thing about this episode.
Oh, well, she is throughout, I think.
And then the Doctor says, yeah, the Harriet Jones, I remember her. She's the architect of the golden age of humanity, a three-term prime minister.
Yeah.
Which he himself will fuck up.
Yes, that is also true. I remember that. And that's the end of the episode.
Almost.
Oh, almost?
Yeah.
Of course. Sorry. Yeah,
we cut scene, and Rose and Jackie have a reunion, and Jackie says, he saved your life, he saved the world, we're going to have a little bit of dialogue about you travelling with him.
Yeah.
So the Doc calls Rose and says, you know, we're getting ready to go, come on, hurry yourself. Jackie's invited him to dinner.
He's not interested at all. He doesn't do dins with companion families.
Ever. No. And
as Eccleston, he doesn't.
As Eccleston, he doesn't.
Later on, as
next two, he does.
Yeah. Matt Smith in particular.
Yeah. And Tennant. Tennant does it in Christmas Invasion.
Bingo bongo.
So, okay. The Doctor is now shouting at the young boy who had sprayed Bad Wolf.
Yeah. Holy crap. We completely neglected to mention the last episode.
We did. There is a Bad Wolf on the side of the TARDIS, and the UN's plan for blowing up and giving the codes to the UK is called Maloup, which means Bad Wolf in French. So that's two Bad Wolves in two episodes.
Wait, hang on. Sorry. Say that again. What was the Maloup?
It is the UN's, it's mentioned very in one of Trinity Wells' newscasts.
Okay.
That the UN plan is called Mal Loop. So Jackie basically can't come into Rose today. It's not going to work. We all cut to the TARDIS. Mickey basically has found out that everyone thinks this is a hoax. He says, yeah, I agree with you, Doc. Humans are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
The Doctor and Mickey then have a little bit of a bonding moment.
Bond. Oh my God, I totally blocked this out of my mind, probably because of Mickey Ricky, but yeah.
Mickey's given a virus that will remove all mention of the Doctor from the internet and probably change all passwords to Buffalo.
Yeah, probably. Why does the Doctor tell Mickey Ricky that he has a gift for him? This CD that the Doctor is giving him that is purely for the Doctor's benefit is labeled a present.
Because at least then Mickey's important.
Oh, I guess so, yeah. Mickey, by the way, comes clean. He says, I'm really sorry, but I completely lack the cojones to go on an adventure with you guys.
But the Doctor invites him.
Yeah, he does invite him. At this point, Mickey Ricky has sort of risen in rank a little bit. His stock has gone up.
But then Mickey says to the Doctor, but don't tell Rose that I'm scared.
Yeah.
And then Rose turns up and says, Mickey, why don't you come with us in our journey through space and time?
Yeah, and then like the Doc totally...
Like Ian and Barbara.
Yeah, and Doc and does Mickey Ricky like a massive solid.
Like, no, you're not invited. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does. So Jackie now turns up and she's failed again to convince Rose to stay.
Yeah.
And Rose says, all right, this is a time machine. I can be back in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So don't worry, I'll be back in 10 seconds. Rose and Doc go off in the TARDIS, wheezing, groaning sound, and...
Supposedly 10 seconds pass, but no one rematerializes.
And basically, Jackie goes home and Mickey sits down and waits.
Yeah.
End of episode.
And end of double feature. Reviews.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did the review first for the last one. It's your turn.
Okie dokie. Well, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, if you listen to the Aliens of London and this review back to back, I am really sorry, but my opinion has not changed in the slightest. I still hate the Slitheen. I hate the fact, now that we know what their plan is, I hate the fact that it's basically, it's almost at par with the plot of Bad Taste. I mean, it is basically just these aliens who want to turn the Earth into fuel as opposed to mankind into burgers. Doesn't matter. It's pretty much the same thing. They're still annoying as hell. Everything is absolutely dumb. I still have absolutely no respect whatsoever for Mickey Ricky. And anyone who is any kind of authority in this universe in which this episode takes place is just a childish parody of a real life scenario. I've already ranted about security and whatnot. If anything, I think this episode is in fact worse than the previous one, plot wise. Because what potential you could have had by replacing the Raxacolico whatever bling Praetorians with, let's say, Autons, you wouldn't gain in this episode, because the plot is there, as in their plan is there, and it is absolutely dumb. However, you have a fantastic bonus point, and that is Harriet. She carries this episode. She is tremendous. She is charming and not necessarily witty, but she is intellectual. She knows about Hannibal. She knows about chemistry. I'm just gonna skip to the end. I hate this episode. I'm giving it a... You know what? Sorted. I'm giving it a 2.2. I'm giving it the same I gave it the last time, because the episode is worse, but Harriet is so good, it bumps it up to 2.2. Boom. There you go. I'm sorry. I don't care. I've lost the will to live.
Okay. So, it's a bit weird, this, because I love the story. And I love the story in Aliens of London. It's the execution of it. It's a problem. The villains are not villains. The acting Prime Minister guy is acting like a villain purely for the sake of acting like a villain. You know, he's almost self-aware that he knows he's meant to be acting like a villain. It's ridiculous.
Can I add something to that?
Please do.
Sorry to interrupt your review, but I think maybe one of the reasons for that is that you don't really get a hierarchy among the Slitheen. Like, there is no the bad guy on their side. They're all just playing parts in some weird human puzzle.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that's a bit of a problem. The CGI Slitheen are quite good.
Mm.
The people in rubber suits Slitheen aren't. The Chekhov gun problem, where we're given, you know, the easy way to defeat the Slitheen, and then we don't use it and we use...
Yeah, it's the Yeti
instead.
Of the story. The vinegar is the Yeti of the story.
You are Yeti obsessed. Anyway, back to my review. Right.
Sorry.
Mickey is getting better. Jackie has become a fully fledged character. We continue our, you know, look at at the companions' families and you know, their relationship with the Doctor. I know we don't like Margaret Slevin as a character, but Annette Badland gives it her all. We think both of us agree totally Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale North, is brilliant. And Penelope Wilton, she comes back a couple of times more, and she is brilliant both times. So she's well worth adding to the Doctor Who canon. Sadly, the entire thing is let down by it being too childish. It has good ideas, especially part one. Part two, less so. But the reason why part two is let down is because the ideas in part one don't lead to anything.
Good point.
And ultimately, it's a knockoff of the Dominators. I want to like both of these. I actually really want to like them, and I cannot bring myself to. So previously, I gave the last one a 1. And a 4, and it averaged out to around about 2. I'm giving this one a 1.5. And all of that is dedicated to the Bring Back Penelope Wilton Fund, you know, because she is most of this. We have Hannibal in thing, we have the narrowing it down bit, which we have the soundbite of, and they're very good scenes, and both of them contain Penelope Wilton. So Penelope, you know, for reasons which are spoilers, you won't be back in New Who ever. So please come and do an audiobook, because we would love that.
Yeah, most definitely. I'll listen to that.
Yeah, so that's my review.
Thank you very much. 1.5? Holy crap, dude.
Let us move on to listener reviews. We have two reviews combined for Aliens of London and World War III.
Yes, we do.
Let's just remind people of our scores for both the episodes.
I'm pretty sure I gave both of them 2.2.
And I gave the first one 2.5 and the second one 1.5. So actually, I'm more cruel to this episode than you are, in a way. So let's go on to our listener
reviews.
It's
not a contest. I say that it's clearly a contest.
A contest.
Yeah, yeah.
let's move on to our first review, which is from Davis of the Davis Principal fame.
Hey, Davis. How are you doing?
Hello, buddy? Davis. So Davis begins with saying, "Oh, Aliens of London. I have very mixed feelings towards this episode. But before I get into that, I have a fun fact."
Let's hear it, Davis.
The Slevin were actually meant to be Zygons. Unfortunately, Doctor Who did not yet have a big enough budget for the Zygons to be done properly, so they were replaced by farting green monsters. Before we get on to the rest of Davis's review, and we will, first of all, we said in the episode we wish they were Autons. Davis, totally agree. Zygons would have worked just as well. Brilliant fact.
That would have been great. That would have been absolutely fantastic. What a shame that they didn't have the budget. Awesome trivia, Davis.
Awesome. So
he goes on, "Speaking of farting green monsters, the Slitheen were very memorable aliens, though not for the right reasons. The farting was not exactly entertaining for me and got old quite quickly. By quickly, I mean immediately. Also, their voices were very garbled and hard to hear at some points. However, there were times when they were pretty creepy. The moment that stands out in my mind is when Rose is being chased around by one, which then smells her fear. This episode also had other good points about it. For example, the UFO crashing into Big Ben was done very well, especially for the budget they had. This episode is also the first time Harriet Jones, Prime Minister, makes an appearance. Yes, I know who she is."
He concludes, "Unfortunately, the story itself, or the alien, were not exactly amazing. It is sort of a boring episode, especially for a three-parter, and which see Boomtown, which is later on in the season. I'm going to have to rate it as a 1.5. Luckily, the next episode is absolutely amazing, and I loved every bit of it."
And we kind of assume that by that you mean Dalek.
We all love Dalek.
Yeah.
And trust me, where next week on New Who Back When, you will see how much we love Dalek.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to be splooging all over the place.
Thank you, Davis. Thank you very much for your review. If you are not Davis, you can follow him on Twitter. Ponkin, what's his Twitter?
Davis is at ShrubThe, all in one word. Follow him, I do, so should you. Thanks, Davis. Awesome review.
Our second review is from Gallifrey and Buccaneer. Hello!
Hello, Buccaneer. How you doing?
And he begins, "I like the Slevin there, as said it. Does the fact they fart all the time add up to anything more than a cheap joke?"
No.
Not really, but I bet kids found it funny. And the more child fans of Who, the better. As some grow up to be devoted fans who submit reviews to obscure podcasts, so such as Who Back When. You can tell I hadn't read this up until the moment where I'm reading it out, which is a very good point, Buccaneer. Well made.
Yeah, well made. He goes on, if you forget the farting, this is a farcical political satire which lends itself incredibly well to Eccleston's sensibilities. Do you mind not farting while I'm saving the world? In quotes. The Slitheen are essentially more economically driven Zygons, and the idea of the PM of Great Britain being a big green alien in a suit is wonderfully subversive. Almost all the authority figures, from the insignificant chairman of a boating club to the police, army, and the PM himself, are portrayed as greedy, manipulative aliens with no care for humanity. This is Doctor Who at a fundamental level, just with more farting.
He continues. Anyway, Billy Piper is great as Rose, developing well with Eccleston, who himself has some prime moments, legging it around 10 Downing Street with a big grin on his face, greeting space pigs with a warm hello. Pure Doctor brilliance. The moment, spoilers, both he and Rose share before a missile has directed them, is played very straight in an otherwise campy episode, and it's all the better for it. Camille Kajuri is also great here as Rose's mum, especially in the first episode, dealing with the shock of Rose's return.
He concludes, I could go on, but I'll end it here and give this two-parter a 3.7.
In a complete twist, the one with the big heart today is Gallifreyan Buccaneer.
Is the Buccaneer.
And if you are not Gallifreyan Buccaneer, which most of you aren't,
yeah,
you can follow him on Twitter.
And so you should. He
and
is.
And what is his Twitter handle?
I'm glad you asked, JD. You can follow Gallifreyan Buccaneer on Twitter. He is at Alan R. Trussler, all in one word, and that's Alan with one L and a U. You figure it out.
Looking at the reviews, you know, Davis obviously was harsher than we were, and Buccaneer was
more generous.
But they both make a very good point, which we didn't pick up on the episode. The Savine are basically poor man Zygons.
Yeah, they are.
And we said that this episode would be brilliant if it didn't have these aliens. And I think we pretty much all agree. But I will say that I agree totally on one of Buccaneer's points.
And that is what? The political criticism?
No. Well, I agree totally on that one. I think we mentioned it.
Yeah.
But no, the more child fans of Doctor Who, the better. And Doctor Who, we need to remember, as fans for years, we need to remember that it is meant to be a children's show. It really is.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Okay, it started off as a children's show, but it started off as an incredibly inappropriate one.
Yes, but he makes a good point that fart jokes are more in the lexicon of children these days than they probably were when I was younger.
True.
So, you know, this started off as an educational show for children. This is a political satire with fart jokes.
And they did actually get that Hannibal reference in there as well.
Yeah, you know, am I saying that Doctor Who shouldn't be a children's show? Absolutely not. And it is a children's show I love, and I also love the Sarah Jane Adventures, which is definitely a children's show, and Torchwood, which is definitely an adult show.
Yeah.
So I would like to thank both of our reviewers, because, you know, no matter what score you give this episode, no matter what score you give any episode,
oh my god, these two dudes have taken time out of their busy schedules to write some freaking spiffing reviews.
So thank you both.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Next time, as Davis has already pointed out, we will be reviewing on New Who. We will be reviewing Dalek,
which is amazing.
It has been the one that I have waited for to review.
It takes New Who to an entirely different level.
Yes.
It adds a psychological edge that we have not seen up until this point.
And I watched it last night and I cannot wait for the review. And you shouldn't either. Don't forget that if you want more Doctor Who information and reviews,
we also do audiobook reviews, we do classic reviews, and occasionally we pop a bonus episode in there as well.
And if you want more information, you can go to Facebook.
Facebook.com/whobackwhen.
And like us there. You can go to Reddit, which is /r/whobackwhen. You can go to Google Plus.
Plus whobackwhen.
Which, to be honest, the password is probably buffalo for.
It is. Log in and post stuff there.
You can follow us on Twitter. He is at Ponkin.
Yes, I am
at Marius Kane.
That's Kane with a K.
And please subscribe and rate on iTunes, because that's the only way we get new listeners.
And speaking of iTunes reviews, I don't know if I ever thanked you for this, JD, because before... Okay, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, go to iTunes, check out Who Back When on iTunes. We have, like, we only have, I think, 3 reviews up there, but one of them is from pre-Who Back When host JD. What a dude! It's still such a dude, thanks.
Yes, but,
and you even like did a little like shout out to my Twitter feed on there as well, so thanks, man.
So yeah, pre hosting Who Back When, John, thanks you for that. that. So there is audiobooks, there is Classic Who, there is New Who, there is bonus episodes. I am JD.
I am Punkin.
Good night.
Shirt chow.
Who back when?